Hey, hallo, willkommen zu Das ist Kunst, dem Podcast der Deichtorhallen Hamburg. Ich bin Jumoke Olusami. Dieses Mal spreche ich mit Philip Montgomery. Die Bilder des mexikanisch-amerikanischen Fotografen zeigen die aktuellen gesellschaftlichen Herausforderungen in den Vereinigten Staaten. Dafür arbeitet Montgomery fast ausschließlich in Schwarz-Weiß, nutzt häufig hartes Blitzlicht, das erzeugt ziemlich starke Kontraste und gibt den Bildern eine fast surreale filmische Atmosphäre.
The aesthetic is borrowed from and inspired by the early crime scene photos, American crime scene photos specifically of 1930s and 1940s Los Angeles.
Mit American Cycles zeigt das Foxy Philip Montgomerys erste große institutionelle Einzelausstellung. Im Gespräch erzählt Philip Montgomery, wer ihn beeinflusst hat und wie er mit seinen fotojournalistischen Arbeiten die Vorstellung von amerikanischer Größe anprangern möchte. Er berichtet von den vielen Stunden, die er mit den Menschen verbringt, die er porträtiert, um ein tieferes Verständnis für ihre Geschichten zu entwickeln. Zunächst wollte ich wissen, ob er eigentlich noch ohne großen technischen Aufwand Handyschnappschüsse von seiner Familie machen kann. Und bevor wir Philip Montgomery jetzt gleich darauf antworten hören, noch diese eine kleine Bitte. Wenn euch der Podcast gefällt, empfehlt ihn gern weiter. Wir haben das Gespräch auf Englisch geführt.
For lack of better words, I think I go full stupid when I like take pictures of my kid in the way that everyone else becomes a total nerdy parent of like, I'm like overly excited and like am having that like senior moment of not being able to open my phone. But yeah, I think the when it starts to get a little bit more like visually poetic in my iPhone is when I'm like doing videos of her. Like I'm then like pretending to be the best DP. I'm like Terrence Malick or something.
Okay. Because I was asking myself if you're like, if you have a strong visual language as a photographer, do you have like some kind of déformation professionnelle that you can't do this with a phone anymore? Like this.
The phone is as playful as can be. And I think if like, I really did want to attach this question to like something meaningful, I think like the work I actually care about in the grand scheme of my life is probably all living on my phone because it's so immediate and feels very much like a visual diary. Mm-hmm. And I think if my house were to burn down, I would be more devastated at losing my iPhones from the early 2000s than I would be like losing my like precious little hard drives from mm-hmm. all this work. But I really like that about the phone because it's, you know, I don't really think and put too much pressure on it at all.
And do you photograph in color or in black and white on your phone?
Both. Yeah, both. Both. I mean, you could be the judge. I'll show you. I'll show you like my private friends only Instagram, which is basically like a place for me to just take pictures, like subject my friends to pictures of my kid. And you could tell me if you feel like there's a hand of authorship in there, if it is as reductive as I'm implying.
And professionally, so to speak, you work only in black and white, right?
I don't. No. It's a mix. Like it depends on, I think for, let's say this for specific commissions, it's a mix. I think in the world of commission photography, so that's like anything that's editorial, anything that's advertising or even fashion, it is really important to have a distinctive visual voice, in order to like, because I think when people that commission photography are thinking about who to hire, it's often, how do I want to say this? Now, who's the person that can say this for me? And so I'm often thought of and considered for black and white shoots, but I often shoot in color and also offer the pictures in color. And then depending on the direction of the shoot, more often than not go to black and white, but there's a lot of times where I'm advocating heavily for color and we end up going that direction.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's more the editorial work, which is in color, but this body of work
that's on view at the Deichtorhallen through May is that series is all black and white. And
why so? Well,
there's multiple reasons. The first being, conceptually, the work is the aesthetic is borrowed from and inspired by the early crime scene photos, American crime scene photos specifically, of 1930s and 1940s Los Angeles. I came across this book maybe back in 2009 called Scene of the Crime, which is just a beautifully printed book of silver gelatin negatives from, or of, I'm sorry, black and white negatives printed on silver gelatin paper of crime scene photographs from Los Angeles. Someone got a hold of that archive and just printed it. And there wasn't any intention in the aesthetic from the people making the pictures. However, it was so objectively beautiful. It was a beautiful light and a beautiful picture on something really devastating. And when I was thinking through, I think, how I wanted to illustrate the country and illustrate the topics that I was looking at, that just kept coming to the forefront of my mind. And I started to really try to replicate that, because that aesthetic wasn't intentional. It was like accidental. It was kind of what they had. And it took someone elevating the physical print to make it sort of the beautiful thing it was. So that's the first reason. And, but then also the second reason, and really quite simply, is my pictures are super graphic. And when you look at them, you arrive at the point pretty quickly of where you're supposed to be. And I think with the language of light, I can drive the viewer where I want to. And in a sort of monochromatic way, that's a lot easier than it is with color. There's just too much going on, and you lose focus on the actual content of the picture. And yeah, that's not to say that, man, I wish at times that I could speak in another language for that, for this series, but black and white has been, I think, the way that's worked for me.
That's interesting that it's based on like crime photography, because the topics are also quite heavy. And I was thinking about, maybe is that what you depict? Do you understand that? I mean, we haven't talked about the topics right now, but it's like, would you see that it's kind of crime, like the opioid crisis? Or
I see the work, and I see the entirety of the work in sort of a conceptual way as basically I've looked at my role and the pictures that I'm making as sort of a criminal court case. I'm like building, I'm the prosecution, and I'm building a case against the idea of American greatness. I'm challenging its greatness, because I think that there's such a sort of impulse on behalf of, I think, many Americans, especially Americans in positions of leadership, to hold on to this nostalgic fiction of greatness and almost celebrate this idea. But that specific idea is really sort of afforded to a certain group of people in the United States. And it's not, we're not a monolithic space. It's very much a place of different kinds and different types. And so when I first heard that sort of idea of make America great again, I really wanted to sort of challenge that idea of, well, when was it great, and for whom? Because while I do find so many endearing qualities in where I come from, and I am proud of the country in certain respects, I do still think that the entire thing is still a grand experiment in democracy. And we have for so long been trying to figure it out, and I don't understand why it's not okay to just say that. And so to bring it full circle, I really think about my work as like the single pictures or the topics as physical exhibits, like exhibit A, addiction, our relationship with treating that, exhibit B, militarization of America's police forces. And I'm just basically trying to put the country on trial a little bit. And I use those photographs, I think, conceptually as like a prosecutor trying to build a case and challenge the defense of that.
Where does this concept come from? Do you grew up, I don't know, in a politically conscious household, or were you part of, I don't know, some Greenpeace action group, or where does
it's not know? I don't know, I'm not like, again, like I, that's more when I'm trying to apply some sort of like, I don't know, maybe you mean in terms of the reference to the legality or the that sort of framework in which I'm thinking, yes, about it. I don't know, I like, no, definitely not, my parents were, are not, do not work in law. I mean, it honestly might truly be influenced by the amount of movies I've watched on sensationalized court trials, which is like such an American thing as well, you know.
And you really,
yeah, and it resonates really with you. I mean, it permeates like every sort of television show. There's the court case and the lawyer, the like cocky lawyer standing up. So, but I do think about that. But also, that is so much of the American experience, right, is like how we are influenced by pop culture and cinema, and, you know, but yeah, that it all sort of fits in.
Yeah, I had to think about theater lighting or cinema, or there were photos I kind of not recognized, but I thought, oh, this could be by Cindy Sherman. So, yeah. Or this is like a scene of a David Lynch film. I could see like the still, I could see like the slow camera moving by.
Yeah. It's very cinematic. And I say we, because I often work with really close and trusted assistants who professionally also light big, large scale productions. And so we try to bring in that specific type of light into intimate settings, and also settings that are, I think, fluid in the way they're moving, whether that be a protest or the halls of power in DC. So we've made something where we've taken these sort of, because the places that I go for my pictures, they're rather boring visually, not in, mm-hmm, the content or the people that I meet. I'm just talking about objectively. I walk into a room and it's pretty bare. I'm more interested in like, okay, how do we make this interesting with the light? And then how does that intersect with like the story I'm trying to tell about the person in it?
And how does that look in a practical way? I mean, speaking about light and other people involved in the photo project. So is there a, I don't know, is there somebody holding the light? How, mm-hmm, big is the light?
It depends on the space, and it depends on like what we can do. I mean, there's a long time that I was working alone. And at that time I would be sort of transforming someone's living room into, you know, I'd be like taping up lights. And but now I've worked with a few people, and we like think about what can work in that space. Mm-hmm. But I don't like it. Again, there's a way to do it where it feels really heavily authored. And then I like to kind of find it right in a sweet spot where you're aware of the presence of it, but it's not distracting from the content of the image. So it's always a bit of a dance that we always have to figure out rather quickly.
That was what I was going to ask you next, because how do you approach these spaces, and how much time do you have to like do the research on the spaces? Do you visit them?
It's pretty quick. I mean, yeah, no, it's
often, or no. It's just taking
it's,
the light.
It's figuring it out. We know how to get there pretty quickly, and I know exactly the quality of light that I want, and how we can kind of achieve it. I mean, if there's a specific picture you had in mind in which you're curious about that, I'd be happy to talk about it. But
yeah, for example, the picture where the mother who was the victim of domestic violence was in her living room with the sleeping kids.
Yeah.
And you have this like...
That's right, Jennifer.
This shadow on the wall, and it's quite... I mean, the kids seem to sleep, but it's like very lit up in a way. And,
yeah. That's a great example, I think, of how it generally works. So in that room, I mean, I'm often sort of asked like, because I do a lot of studio portrait work, and I think one of the common and understandable question is like, what, like, who's been the most incredible person you've photographed? And it's always a tricky answer because I know what someone's asking, but I don't, but it's a little bit difficult for me because I would much rather spend 4 hours in that living room with Jennifer and her kids than I think I would in hanging out with some hot celebrity, which is because in that situation,
it challenges you more.
Well, it challenges me, but it's also like I learn about the human experience. Like, it was a privilege. Like, that photograph is multi-layered and the things that I hope to convey to the viewer. But like, at the end of the day, what was really like the big life-fulfilling experience of being in her living room was I got to watch a woman parent and understand the complexities of being a single parent, being a woman of color, in one of the poorest, if not the poorest county in Ohio. And it was just a privilege to understand that and watch that and be welcomed into that space with the understanding that that's exactly why I'm there. And those are, that's like really the highlight of my work. And it's really where I would love to spend like the rest of my days working, is just in close proximity and just sort of sitting around looking at nothing specifically. And I think that's like, so for a picture like that, to bring it back to the technical, like, that's me and Jennifer, and that room objectively doesn't work. Like, it's two couches, there's a folded sheets over the window, but it's really straightforward. But I think I sat there and just kept making pictures, and I faded into the background. Like, of course, it's a big footprint. Like,
how long were you there?
Must have been hours, like 2 or 3 hours. But I had, like, you know, visited with her the day before, and those kids were, you know, doing kid things, and that they're fascinated by you. And but I think after like a day, you kind of just fade into the background and you're no longer exciting. And of course, I'm like, the whole time I'm engaging with, you know, I'm a guest in the house, so you're talking, we're talking about sports, we're talking about you know, I think I remember we were like, a new Drake album had come out, we were okay. Talking about Drake, like, and so, but the expression in that picture is just a sliver of time in which all the kids were asleep and she places her hands over her face. And to me, it was just watching how tiring parenting is, and that's so relatable. But then her parenting is made so much harder by the circumstances of her life and the lack of support systems in the United States. And that's what that picture hopes to get at, you know? And I'm so happy it's in the show, because it's intimate, but it's also, there's something visually that is striking about it that I still, when I look at it now, I still try to wrap my mind around what's working in it.
How do you approach people you want to portray? How do you get to know about them?
With Jennifer, I don't exactly remember. I know the context that I was in that area. I was interested in looking at the welfare system, mm-hmm. the state welfare system, and looking at the poorest county in Ohio. But I don't remember how exactly I intersected with Jennifer specifically. But there's a number. I mean, there's a lot of examples. My background is very much in magazine photography, and I come from really heavy journalistic roots, and I'm good, if there's one thing I am good at, it's knowing how to source people and figure out the right places to be for the images I need to do. So oftentimes it's really doing what the job of great newspaper people have done for years, and that's just working the phones, making calls. Hi, I'm working on a project that looks at XYZ. I'm wondering if you can help put me in touch with somebody that might have this going on. Or, hey, do you have any leads to that could help me find like this specific topic? And it really is just about like knocking on every door and turning over every stone until you get there.
Mm-hmm. And then after you have spent so much time with Jennifer, does she approve the photos, or are they yours? You decide what are you going to.
Yeah, I decide. I do not really have a further collaboration after the photography is made. That's very much on me as the author to decide how the folks in my pictures are depicted and illustrated, and that's extremely considered. But after that, there's not much consultation around the photography.
And people know that. So that's something you speak beforehand.
Absolutely. I'm super explicit. Like with all of the work, that's the only way that I know how to do it. It's also the only way to, I think, have those relationships and sometimes maybe address difficult moments in people's lives without them being angry with you, you know, is you go in there with the exact reason. Like, I want to shift maybe the attention from Jennifer for a second, but like, I even think about, there's another image in the show that's really painful and maybe falls in line a little bit more with documentary journalistic practices. There's an image called Saying Goodbye to Brian, which features a woman called Patty who is engaging her son's body after he was found dead of an opioid overdose in the basement of her home. In that scenario, I realized how delicate and delicate is the word, how delicate that situation is. I was there as an outsider. I made the photograph on the hardest day of a mother's life. I mean, I think about it as a parent, and if someone was photographing me as I was engaging my daughter who had passed away from an overdose for the first time, I would probably lose it, understandably so. But I made the pictures, the family didn't engage with me, and I knew that that time wasn't the time to engage them, but I had to go back and I had to introduce myself maybe 4 or 5 days later. And so I felt morally okay with where we landed with the picture. And I think after I did that, they immediately invited me to his funeral, asked me to take photographs of his funeral. And so there is, again, I'm always like, as much as there's so much division in the United States, I'm always really touched and moved by the openness of Americans. And there is a sort of quality of like, this is who I am. Like an unflinching sort of sentiment of like, this is who I am. Like, take it at face value. And there's a real openness on behalf of Americans that I think is really unique. And that's a really clear example of that. I try to level with people right away in a simple way of like, I am a photographer. I live in New York. I'm doing work on how addiction, specifically opioid and heroin addiction, is the largest killer of Americans under the age of 50. From what I understand, you're struggling with addiction. Can you help me understand that? And I'd like to spend time photographing you, because I think that there's a lot that people don't understand around the complexities of addiction. And that's all. And all someone has to say is no. And then it's onward. But most of the time people weirdly are receptive to that and sort of want their stories told. And it's really special.
And do you show them photos? Other photos of what?
I'm sure if they ask. Like, I'm not like a, I'm not crazy. Like, I'm like, yeah, for sure. If someone is like,
But well, do they ask? Are people interested? It
depends on the person. Mm-hmm. But like, no, again, I'm surprised by that. I think that's like, yeah, I'm surprised by how little, like, I don't know, but also everyone has the internet. Like, sometimes the answer is like, I don't know, like, can I just give you my number and you follow up, and mm-hmm. I'll generally send along my work, and then,
okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not like, they're living in some hole where it's like, it's still handwritten letters. Like, everyone has Instagram.
No, sure. But I don't know if everyone looks it up or, I don't know.
No,
but I was asking myself, maybe if the aesthetics of the image somehow protect the people you depict, and if they kind of feel in a way, you know, if they see how you work, maybe they say, oh, I want to be part of this because I like how you show people, or this is, you know.
That's a fascinating question, and one that I've never been asked or had to contemplate. And I want to try and give like an honest answer. I feel like that luxury of like self-awareness of image is like one that is afforded by maybe people in our positions who do creative work for a living, or like or live in maybe bigger cities. I think that most of the people that live in my photographs or whom I work with in close proximity in those sort of environments are going about their day-to-day life without that sort of like, how do I look in the context of history, which is why, again, I'm aware of that. And I feel really the need to tread lightly and be careful and protect the people I photograph, because I'm deeply aware at the onset of every interaction how the, I don't want to say unfair, but there is like the power in which I have. I go home to New York and they stay. I am a person that has come into the community and I leave. And so there is a very real, and often sometimes people, and there's been people have written, like Janet Malcolm of The New Yorker wrote books on, you know, the journalist and the murderer, around like people often speak in ways that works against their best interests. And we have to be really careful around when that's happening and flag it and try to protect the people that we work with in order to continue to make great work.
Do you perceive yourself as a photographer and as a private person as separate individuals? So if you say that there is a image you look at or you think of that must be very painful for the people who are experiencing that, what you're documenting, and then you see yourself maybe in their position, are you sometimes in situations you wouldn't want to be yourself, or wouldn't want to be like, I don't know, observed, or you don't feel like comfortable doing that?
Oh my God, every time.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm amazed. I'm amazed and privileged by how, again, it is like a deep privilege to be allowed and at times invited into someone's space. I would never ever allow for someone like me to come and take pictures of me in the ways that I take pictures of people. And so anytime someone says no, I totally get it. And I get it. But that's also like, I'm also, you know, even for the show in the Deutscher Hall, and like, there have been instances in which they've asked to take pictures of me in the museum space, and I'm like uncomfortable with it. Like, so I'm like, I became a photographer also to get away from maybe that, that sort of thing. But yeah, I to answer your question, definitely, I would probably not condone it. But there's also, at the same time though, it would maybe take shape, and would I go on the record in a long form piece of journalism and talk about a topic that's happening to me? Totally. Absolutely. It's just a different way. And there's sometimes that people won't talk to writers, but they'll agree to be photographed, and as long as they don't have to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a, like, it's to each their own a little bit.
Okay. And talking about how you became a photographer, I thought when I looked at your pictures, oh, maybe he has like a past in theater or something, or in music, because you have like the great sense of timing or whatever. So I don't know. So what was your trajectory, say in English, I guess, to photography?
I had a really unexciting, beginning in photography, and what I can attribute to, I think, being able to make the amount of work that I have at this age, I guess, is I started really young, and I found photography at a really early time in my life. I found it midway through high school, like at age 16.
How come?
It's a two-part answer, and I'll try to consolidate as tight as I can. I think my first like actual understanding of not mature photography, but like specific photography that is like more perhaps in line with what I do now was at 16. I saw a documentary on a prominent war photographer, and that sort, and it blew my mind. I was already interested in photography, but I saw humanistic concern photography, and this film looked at that photographer's work, and it also did this revolutionary thing that was before the time of GoPros, where the director of the film mounted a small camera on top of the photojournalist's camera, so we were quite literally seeing how these images were made. Mm-hmm. And to me, I think what was more fascinating was the environments in which that photographer made work in.
Who was that?
It was James Nakwe.
Okay.
And which is like, this is a radio interview, but I'm like rolling my eyes a little bit at how that is like a total stereotypical trope for, I think, a lot of male photographers, where you do have your moment of being 16 and thinking that the action figure photojournalist is the coolest thing you've ever seen. But I still will defend it in that the way that that man composed images in an extremely graphic and classical painterly way and really high intensity situations, like, did inform my understanding of what the medium could be. And so for a long time in my like early years in photography, my late teenage years, I was sort of trying to emulate the intensity of the situations in which that photographer was. But in, I think,
how so? Where you looking
I traveled and moved to India to go take pictures in Kashmir, where there was an active sort of conflict between Pakistan and India.
How old were you?
18.
Wow.
So, yeah, right when I got out of high school, much to my parents' is like shock. And I look back on it now and think it was so like dumb and misguided, but I also was just really ambitious. There was nothing sort of else for me in terms of like, I had really bad grades and I really was committed to the fact that I was going to make photography somehow work.
But did you have any formal training when Mm-mm. you went there?
No, I didn't. I was like freelancing for local newspapers, and I had like a few like helpful conversations with newspaper photographers in the region of Los Angeles that were like, well, I think that it's important to maybe make a small series of pictures on a place and a person. Like, so there were like these small conversations, but no, like I didn't go to school. I didn't go to college. It was more like, this is also a really lush time on the internet in which like I was able to access these photographers and learn about photography through a web browser, which now this all feels so dated and old, but this was like, you know, 2006, mm-hmm. Where you're starting to be able to go down internet rabbit holes and learn about the craft through these early practitioners. When I came back after spending time internationally, I was sort of left with the feeling of, God, I had nothing to say about what I was looking at. And also, I think a little bit grossed out at my own behavior. Like, basically, the intentions around the work were to try and make pictures that were sensational and loud, because that's what I thought was necessary, or that's what I thought equated to being a successful image. But I soon found in New York that, like, success in photography, a photographic picture, is so much more. And my understanding of the medium was so small. And that was such an absolute relief that there was, you could still make pictures about people and on people, but there are other really exciting ways that are a lot more subtle and have carry a lot of resonance and weight. I think I still see there's really important photojournalists out there or concerned photographers out there, but I think there's a lot of that same cohort that often are chasing pictures that are the most dramatic and can be at times a bit predatory and make me feel a little bit gross.
So is your work also about telling the truth in a way?
No, and that's something that I think the show confronts. So it's a mix. Like, I don't feel comfortable referring to myself as a photojournalist. Do I commit acts of journalism regularly? Definitely. The work I do for The New Yorker, The New York Times Magazine, when we go, we do it. And I think I'm really proud of the quote unquote journalism I've done. But the work that's on display at the Dijkstra Hall is right, I think, at the intersection of where documentary meets fine art photography. And that the content inside the images is all real life. None of it's staged, and it is all topically relevant and factual, and often does sort of have a close proximity to the news cycle and the topics of today. Where I then think it diverts in its quote unquote truthfulness, and I think it's very obvious to any viewer, is that there's a really heavy hand of visual authorship. There is an artificial light. Rooms do not typically look the way that they do. Like, a normal room does not look like it does in my photographs. But I think that the reader and the viewer is smart enough now to know that that's kind of what they're getting.
Do you ask people to pose in a specific way?
Never.
Never.
Never. No. I still play by the quote unquote rules. It's a little bit, there's a little bit, I have more pride in, like, I'd rather sit around for hours and keep trying to get it than I would, instead of being like, all right, fuck it, hold on. just move that out of your face, please. I would rather just struggle through it. Obviously, if it's a portrait, that's a totally different situation, where that is definitely a controlled environment in which I'm very much tinkering. And there's a lot of portraits in the show. Mm-hmm. I really have faith in the intelligence of my viewer, especially like right now, the literacy amongst the general population because of Instagram is so high that I kind of like, I don't really question whether or not they're confused as to whether it's real or what. But also I think even in the show, so much of my work is inextricably linked to information around the picture. But in the show, we decided to not have any text that accompanies the photographs. However, there's an exhibition guide, and it corresponds with numbers. And if you want more information, you go and get it. And actually, the information is a big portal into the larger topics in which it's looking at. So there's information there, and it's all based in reality, but I'm not setting anything up.
Mm-hmm. And it's your first solo show in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean for you to have it in Germany?
It's an incredible, it's a privilege to be exhibiting work. And it's a privilege to be exhibiting work where I have the entirety of the space. And it's also a real privilege to be in Germany, in that I've always had such a warm reception to my work and my photography, and it's felt really understood here by the audience. There's such an elevated visual language amongst German museum visitors and also German readers, and there's such a beautiful and rich history of excellent photography and excellent art out of this country. And also there's a little bit of, it feels a little bit liberating and safe to, I think, have a show that addresses a lot of these topics here, where I don't have to exactly feel too filtered or considered about the way that we exhibit pictures or what pictures go, because there is, not that I would be censored or fearful in the United States, but I am, it would keep me up, I think, if this show was on display in DC. I have a colleague who makes work that's really similar that has a show in DC, and I know it's been a delicate dance in terms of dealing with like the topics and the potential repercussions from the administration. Just mm-hmm. It's a lot more considered, and that's happening in institutions all across the United States. And so it has been a privilege to just not have that lingering concern in the back of my mind.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
And also the curator of this show has such a strong and thoughtful understanding of the complexities of the United States, which is like such a nice partnership, and has really done a good job at helping us ground the show that makes it, I think, interesting for a German audience, and as well as doing really, like, I think, doing the work justice and also staying true to the original aim of the work, which is a look at America.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm also curious to hear how it resonates with a German audience, especially against the backdrop of a politically precarious time in Germany as well.
And do your topics, do they have an end in a way, or your projects, maybe more specifically, or are they all ongoing, like opiate crisis, climate change?
No, I think I'm interested. It's like again, those are like chapters and topics within the big umbrella sort of project that I'm looking at and working on. It's like I don't know where it ends. I certainly know where it began, and it began when President Obama's administration ended and the U.S. elected Donald Trump. And so that's where it started. And I feel like I've really been looking at the Trump years. And even when Biden was in power, there was still, it was all that time was still relevant, because it's still, even if there's a new administration that comes in, the country still feels the policies that were enacted by that. So it is important that I like stick with it. But I don't know. But again, that framework isn't essential to what I'm looking at. And I think at some point I'm interested in moving on and getting, I think, more hyper-specific on another body of work that's also maybe a little bit more based in fiction than it is in mm-hmm. reality. So
why?
I don't know. Maybe out of, that's the type of photography and the type of work I like to read as well. My favorite photographers, like really, one of my favorite photographers is Alex Soth. Are you familiar with his work?
No.
Yeah, he's a fine artist, and he makes pictures that I think are, again, are with real people, but the larger premise of the work that he often makes is sort of a bit of a fiction. Like he'll, I think his seminal book that I was really interested in really like reshaped the way I even saw this medium was this book called Niagara, where he explored Niagara Falls and the city of Niagara as a destination of love and a destination of suicide. Mm-hmm. And so the way in which we, the viewer, got to experience Niagara was through Alec looking for lovers and looking for broken love. And so it was groundbreaking for me. And like, if you go to a place, like the traditional way I knew how to bring someone into a place was you go to the town, you go to the coffee shop, you go to this. But what he did instead was he would go and photograph a portrait of the loser of a high school boxing competition and his girlfriend. And then he'd photograph these sort of empty honeymoon hotels. But through all these pictures and through this one topic, this one anchoring of like broken love and love, we got to experience Niagara, but through a really specific filter.
Right.
And so I understood all the pictures that I was looking at to be real, but I did know that there's like a theme that moves through it. And even the best fiction I read, it has such a like accurate and keen description of the world that you're living in, but there's almost like an intellectual safety that allows you to feel more because you know it's not real. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And absolutely. I think that's like what fiction does, and when it's at its absolute best. And I'd be so interested in making a piece of like visual fiction that still makes you feel moved.
And if you think about that, is how important is writing or words or verbalizing that? Is there kind of a framework for you? I don't know.
I would think, I mean, especially in the show, like the writing is really exact and really specific, and it reads, again, to take it back to the show that's on at the Deutsche Hall, and it's the way it's written is... maybe this is the wrong word. It's legalistic. It's like, it's judicial. It's like, it reads like a legal document of like, yes, it's clinical. It's like, these are the facts. This happened here. Like today I read like the court's, like the court text that basically, dropped charges against the Trump administration against, former FBI Director Comey, and the legal language that it used was so specific with no fat on it. And it sort of reminded me of the show. So in that regard, like text is really important, but I do think to then how that translates over to maybe work that's fictional. I think some of the best, my favorite work is when it's like not overly, like overly described. Like some of the best ideas and some of the best work fiction is like really simple. Mm-hmm. And then it's the photography comes in and does the really heavy lifting of being really good. And I this is such a basic statement, but I love excellent photography so much. And that is still like the star. Like we've been talking so much about like the intention and the message and the connection with people, but like it's also at the end of the day you do have to have like a really graphic sensibility in what you're making, or like graphic's an overused word, but maybe like I don't know, just a strong visual sensibility in what you're trying to author and say, because that is ultimately what I am as a photographer.
Yeah, well, I hope you have a great time here.
Yeah, and thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me. It's a real pleasure.
Likewise. Yeah. Thank you.
Philip Montgomery ist kein unbeteiligter Beobachter. Die Intensität seiner Bilder entsteht durch eine fast theatrale Inszenierung menschlicher Schicksale. Weitere Informationen zur Ausstellung American Cycles im Foxy gibt es in den Shownotes. Das ist Kunst ist eine Produktion der Deichtorhallen Hamburg in Kooperation mit Byte FM. Redaktion: Priska Dolling, Gabriela Basso und Matthias Schönebäumer. Die Musik stammt von Alex Blanke. Das Logodesign von Gabriela Basso. Moderation und Produktion Jumoko Olusanmi.